You are listening to Noongar Radio, and welcome back to the Law Matters radio program for another fortnight, brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Great to have your company for the next hour. Jodie Hoffman with you, and we've got a special hour coming your way because we're going to be talking about a pretty historical milestone that took place in Perth on Friday night, and it was the celebrations of the 40th anniversary of the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. An incredible feat to think that we've been around for 40 years, and what an amazing night it was as well. We had a huge array of talent and guest speakers. One of those guest speakers joins me in the studio before too long, Ningala Yaron Marks. We'll be talking with us about her own involvement with the justice system, but also going back to the 60s and 70s and the involvement of family members of Ningala's who strived for justice in those very early years when the ALS was first being established here in Western Australia. Law Matters brought to you by the ALS of WA, and as I mentioned at the top of the program, pretty special night on Friday night in Perth where over 360 guests gathered in Perth to celebrate the 40th anniversary of the Aboriginal Legal Service in this state. Dennis Eggington, CEO for the last 18 years. Boy, neat, been at the helm for nearly half of that 40 years, Dennis. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jared, and hello to all our listeners this morning.
It was an incredible night, wasn't it, Dennis, because it brought together not just all our staff from over Western Australia, but familiar faces spanning that 40 years of people who've been involved with the service since its beginnings.
Muddy night. Very proud night for all of us, particularly those of us that are currently working at the ALS, of course, because it gave us the chance to say thank you to all those people that had gone before us, who had helped get the service up and running in the very early days. So we had people who not only established the ALS, but people had worked hard during those 40 years to be able to continue to deliver a wonderful service right across the state of WA. So, yeah, it was a fantastic night, and those people that organised it and worked hard to have the night up, they should be very proud of what they achieved. Including you,
Jodie
Hoffman.
I think, you know, the tone was set so beautifully at the start of the night with Barry Maguire and the dancers who did the cultural welcome, and it just, you knew from that moment on, I think, that it was a pretty special night, hey?
One blood. Barry Maguire and Maguire Boys One Blood are tremendous. Great performance, but they did set the scene, they set the pace. Wonderful welcome to country with some stories of old Mr. Maguire and his association with the Aboriginal Legal Service, and of course that wonderful performance with the boys dancing and doing local Noongar dances from this area, traditional Noongar stories and dances from the Perth area. Absolutely fantastic, Joe.
And I don't think we could have asked for better MCs than Narelda Jacobs and Jim Morrison. Didn't they hold the night together brilliantly?
Well, look, let me thank both of them for their work on Friday night. The way they bounced off each other, I'm not sure they had a chance to practice any of that. So it was great to see two people so professional in what they do and keeping everything flowing and working. Narelda and Jim really did us a tremendous tremendous amount of goodwill, and I guess in the end, just pure professionalism from both of them.
Ningala Yaron, Ningala Yaron Marks was one of the guest speakers on the night, and over the next hour, we're going to be discussing the night in more detail and talking about some of the other speakers who were up on the night and performances and just what an awesome night it was. But wasn't it incredible to think that there were people and children of previous sort of staff members and community members from going back 50 years, Dennis, who've had an involvement in the service?
Well, seeing that it was a 40-year celebration and the fact that lots of those people 40 years ago, you know, were in their 20s and 30s or 40s themselves, we can obviously expect that many of them wouldn't be with us on Friday night. But those families, you know, the Yaron family, the Colbung family, and the Morrison family and the Riley family and the Forrest family and others should be very proud of what their fathers and uncles and grandfathers and grandmothers and aunties did in establishing an iconic organisation. As I said on the night, it's not just a service delivery organisation. It just doesn't provide a service to our Aboriginal community, but it is a part of the fabric of the justice system in WA. And I've always said that without the ALS, the justice system, particularly in rural and remote areas, would fall apart. But once again, it's an organisation that has made so much social change for the betterment of everybody, not just Aboriginal people, but everyone in the state. It's helped make the state a better place.
You know, the program that we produce and present here on Noongar Radio every fortnight, I guess we spend a lot of time talking about the over-representation of our mob in prisons, what's going wrong with the justice system, what we still need to do to advance the human rights of our peoples. Friday night was such a standout because it was almost 400 people getting together and just really enjoying each other's company, talking about old times and I guess talking about the struggles that are still faced, but pretty rare where you all get to come together for a really good celebration, hey?
Oh, that's right. And so staff, community members, people from the judiciary, politicians, they were all there and all talking. But the wonderful thing is that the vast majority of those people that were at the table, the vast majority of those 400 people, all were connected in some way with the Aboriginal Legal Service. So it was and always will be run as a just this huge big ALS family, and we've got lots of work to do, but there's lots of good things too. It wasn't a night to sort of go into a lot of that stuff because it was a night just to celebrate, and the way the show was run, particularly with the speakers and the entertainment, meant that it was a tight schedule and there wasn't much downtime at all, if any, maybe just between the meals. So there wasn't a chance to really go over those 40 years and let everyone know what we did, but just to thank them for coming and being a part of that 40 years and then letting people let their hair down, enjoy themselves and enjoy the company. And I know that Ningla's coming on later on and I'd just like to thank her because so many people have come up and said, oh, what a wonderful speech by Ningla. And so I want to thank her. Let me say that lots of people also said, gee, she's your mother's own girl. So you can tell Ningla that for me.
You just told her yourself, Ningla. You get a right of reply, Ningla.
Well, I have actually been put in the same category on more than one occasion, and it's an honour and a privilege to be able to say, yes, I do mimic, and I am very much like my mother as well as my father. And thank you for the
compliment. Well as Dad, that's yes. Right. And I just, thank you so much for being a part of the night. Your family has a proud history with the Aboriginal Legal Service, and it was only fitting that someone like yourself, particularly getting your law degree and, working where you've worked and the work you do now. So congratulations to you and your family and everyone else, Toad, that has had something to do with our service over the 40 years.
18 years as the CEO, Dennis. It was an incredibly significant milestone on Friday night, and look forward to the next 40 years. Just in summing up, before we have a yarn with Ningla, who is quite emotional at the moment because it does, I guess, stir up a lot of things in our community, how far we have come, those struggles that have been faced. And I guess, Ningla was there with some of her gorgeous daughters. And it's, that passing the baton on as well, isn't it? And seeing the pride when the next generations are coming through and maintaining that strength, hey?
It is, and when you have a look at a family like the Blurton family, and I heard Teddy Wilkes singing Kaka Namyam, and I think it was through Teddy that I got to meet most of the Blurton family, but you know, a father and three children all working for the Aboriginal Legal Service. So we are a best employment practice for Aboriginal people. It's probably something that people don't realise when they think about the Aboriginal Legal Service. Generations of family members working for the one organisation and, you know, building up good work ethics, being a part of the economy and stuff. And, you know, Aboriginal Legal Services, like medical services, run in the 50, 60, sometimes 70% of their staff are Aboriginal. And, you know, that's... If mining companies could achieve those sorts of outcomes, they would be hailed as, you know, the employer of choice for Aboriginal people. And here, you know, we've been doing that for 40 years, you know, getting people in the economy working, and it's been so successful that their children have wanted to come and work for us too, and I'm quite sure grandchildren in the future, Joe. So, yeah, I'm pretty proud to be the CEO. 18 years is a long time, and it's not the easiest of jobs, but it's certainly a job that you're always very proud of.
And we're all very proud of our 40th celebrations and the special people it brought together. Thank you for your time, Dennis. We're gonna have some music from Yothu Yindi, a little song called Mabo, another significant milestone in all of our time. But thanks for your time on the program, and coming up short, we're gonna have a bigger yarn with Ningala.
Yeah, look, we'll get off the phone, and we'll put the radio on, and I look forward to hearing from Ningala as well. Thank you.
Dennis Eggington, CEO of the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. This program is dedicated to our 40th anniversary. We're still smiling from ear to ear about some of the funny stories and speeches and momentous times that we heard the other night. And you're going to hear from Ningala Yaron Marks very soon. But today on the program, we are relishing in the fantastic 40th anniversary celebrations of the Aboriginal Legal Service held in Perth on Friday night. Incredible speakers. As we've already mentioned, that the night was emceed by Jim Morrison and Nerelda Jacobs. Beautiful Welcome to Country by Barry Maguire. And speakers who highlighted different times over our last 40 years. Professor Colleen Haywood, Associate Professor Ted Wilkes, Fred Chambers. Janey was there, my next guest was there, Ningala Yaron Marks, and an incredibly poignant speech by Ningala, whose family has an incredibly long involvement with the Aboriginal Legal Service. And I guess it was a speech that brought lots of laughter, but within that it was so poignant the way it was delivered, and there wasn't a dry eye in the house. So to welcome to the program now, Ningala Yaron Marks, thank you for your time. You really did capture so much of the essence of the Aboriginal Legal Service in your speech. Welcome to Law Matters.
Thank you, and it's an absolute honour and privilege to be here.
Before we talk about some of the things that you touched on Friday night, I want to find out about your family. Tell us about the Yaron mob. Tell us about being a kid and the time of social justice that you grew up in.
Well, Mount Magnet Reserve was a very hostile place for all intents and purposes. Here I was as a young child, quite naive in my ways, surrounded by family, looked after by older aunties, a hard-working mum, a hard-working dad, and a whole lot of strife that I wasn't really subject to, per se. It was always on the outer periphery. But here I was thinking, and I have often said this before, that I thought a reserve was where blackfellas chose to live. It wasn't until I went off and went to university that I undertook the exercise of examining in a little bit more detail what the intent was during that era. And I was a child of 65, coming up for 50 almost, and it was a time of harsh politics about separatist movements. It was about removing Aboriginal people who were perceived as the problem on the outer periphery of society. And so these reserves were very much removed from the main town centre. The overlying or underlying principles were that if you were black on the streets when the streetlights came on, you would be incarcerated for no other reason but being black.
That must resonate very strongly through your childhood and how you see that it affects members of your family, your community, because it's really affecting your daily movement of where you can go and what you can do and who you can associate with.
Well, speaking about daily movement, you had an interaction just now about what that daily movement looks like and how conflict is still there. The assessment from the broader populace, from the dominant culture, is that Aboriginal people are still the problem. And I was so excited to hear Rosalie Monks discuss the issue at length on television, on national television, when she said, "I am not the problem." And that is something that, whilst we have made massive inroads both in the political frameworks, social justice issues, and a whole lot of other arenas, that kind of hostility still rears its ugly head, and we have to be confronted with that, some of us, on a daily basis. So how do we develop a sense of resilience? And for me, it comes from knowing that in all of my life, my life's journey has been a reflection of the intense humility from my parents, the struggle from the street marches, the sense of dignity and worth that comes from knowing that you belong to something as old as time, that despite what has happened to us in the intervening years since first contact, we have survived. We are still here today, not because of it, but in spite of it.
Your parents played a huge role in your belief systems, your strength. I think since I've met you maybe 20 or so years ago, Ningala, you have been a real role model in what you've done. Your own children must be incredibly proud. I'm wanting to know, when you think of family, what does it mean to you?
I get highly emotional when I think about it. But I think the most exciting part of my journey has been that I have very much understood from whence I've come and where I'm going. And that doesn't happen by chance. That happens when you have parents who lead by example, fight the good fight, undertake to do whatever it takes to create a safer, more livable world for their offspring. And my mother and father were no exception. Part of my story on Friday was talking about the early days, long before the establishment of the Aboriginal Legal Service. And I can remember then that Dad was the advocate, the mediator, the person that negotiated outcomes where conflict arose, and he was constantly being relied on by the police service of the day. And it was because he had this uncanny knack of being able to articulate the issues from both sides of the equation. He had an extraordinary ability to be a great storyteller. And that would win him friends in the non-Aboriginal world who were fascinated by this intriguing individual who was incredibly articulate, funny as can be, and it's of no surprise to me that my brothers have picked up on some of those, and perhaps I have too, in being able to tell a great story or spin a yarn and have everyone rolling in the eyes. I learnt that from my father. I learnt humility. I learnt that despite what we're confronted with, that there might be somebody else who perhaps are going through their own struggles. So it's not for us to undertake the exercise to belittle or badger or place undue duress on others when we ourselves are hurting. So I've learnt some incredible lessons. And of course, the old adage of behind every great man is a great woman. And my mother was one of those. Hardworking, committed, dedicated. I mean, it was an incredible travesty to be actually, as a qualified nurse, working at the Mount Magnet Hospital that had a separate ward for blacks because we weren't allowed to be integrated with the rest of the hospital population. And to see her mother die an undignified death with second-rate medical attention would have been gut-wrenching. But my mother, being the woman that she was, undertook the exercise to nurse her mother with great dignity until it was her time to go. But it created another strong desire in my mother, and that was that we as a community, we as a race, should not be undertaking the exercise of sitting on the outer periphery of society, that we ourselves need to take stock, take check of who we are and where we're at, and undertake the exercise to make it better, not just for ourselves, but our families and our communities. So talk about someone with guts and balls. Am I allowed to say that? Yeah. I'm gonna say it. That's who Ann Yaron was. Ann Yaron was a feisty woman that called it how it was. In actual fact, at her funeral service, her brother used the quote, "She had a mouth that would make a drover blush." So it was of no surprise growing up to hear profanity used as expletives to really hone in on the issue. So I couldn't have asked for better parents. Tragically, they too became statistics themselves. My father died at the tender age of 42. My mother was only 48. In fact, we were making these great plans for her great 50th, but it never arrived. So I consider them extraordinary for their time, because when other kids were being exposed to a whole lot of other stuff, like my mother had a very stern taskmaster in her mother. So my grandmother, Mary Forrest, was a feisty woman. So it's no surprise that Ann Yaron turned out exactly like her mother. And when people say to me, "You're just like your mother," I take that as the greatest compliment, because we were exposed as children to not just reading magazines or watching telly, although telly didn't come in until much later, I remember that. But my mother would make a great fuss of educating us in all things outside of our own cultural boundaries. We would go to the theatre and ballet and go to the art gallery, and we would read poems and listen to classical music. And my mother thought it was really, really important for us to ensure that we were well-versed, well-read, well-rounded individuals that understood what the world looked like outside of our cultural parameters. So even though both of them were very strong on culture, and when we lived in Mount Magnet, in fact, our relatives, when they would come and visit us, would laugh at us kids, because we were semi-literate. We would speak like a pidgin English, only because language was so strong on countries. So English was like a second or third language. And in my grandfather's instance, because of him being a senior within his traditional group, he was multilingual, spoke at least four or five different Aboriginal languages on top of English. But my mother thought it was really, really important for us to be able to articulate ourselves in a fashion where it would not attract the stereotypical imagery that the rest of the dominant culture had, that Aboriginal people were dumb and stupid and therefore ignorant and was not able to articulate the English language. So it's... You know, over the years I've had some funny stories, and it's quite telling when the broader populace hears you speak and they talk to you on the telephone, and then they say, "Oh, well, I didn't realise you were black." It's almost like an affirmation that, oh, black people are not allowed to be intelligent, they're not allowed to be articulate, they're not allowed to have any of those what we consider cultural aspects to them, that they are somehow stuck in a time warp, that is where they belong. But both parents were huge influences on my life, where it was about not talking the talk, it was about walking the walk, and every aspect of their journey was about leaving a message behind for me to follow, so that I could then institute the same kind of passion and learning and exceptional excelling for brilliance was very much a part of my household growing up. So I had no excuse. So here I was telling the crowd, saying that, you know, my dad inspired me to take on and do a law degree. Yes, that is absolutely true, but it was mum who drove this engine behind the scenes, which was about excellence, which was about being particularly articulate, being well-versed, being well-rounded, being highly educated. She valued education. In fact, one of her favourite sayings was, education is the golden key that unlocks many doors. And so it's just a pity that I didn't listen to her earlier quotations about the importance of education, because it wasn't until I was a 31-year-old that I went off to do my law degree. So I should have listened, but I'm one of those stubborn folks that can't tell me anything. I have to hear it maybe three or four times, or maybe fall off my bike and dong my head on the pavement in order, and even extract blood when I'm falling on the damn pavement in order to have that lesson sink in. But had it not been for these two extraordinary human beings, I would not be the woman that I am today.
Let's pause there. Ningala Yaren Marks is my guest on Law Matters. You're on Law Matters here on Noongar Radio and the National Indigenous Radio Service. My guest in the studio is Ningala Yaren Marks, and we're reflecting on years gone by and the fact that the ALS turned 40. And I do want to mention our great entertainers the other night for the 40th anniversary celebrations. The awesome Marindas, all glitzy in their shiny red dresses, just beautiful. The Yabu band were there. Dennis Simmons played some guitar. The Urban Youth Crew performed, and it was just such a really beautiful night. And got to mention as well all the cool students, the deadly future students at Central Institute of Technology in Leederville, who wood burnt boomerangs for every guest to take home with them, and said celebrating ours was 40th anniversary, and the boomerangs were just so well received. And I know that the students out at Central in Leederville have been working really, really hard on that community project, but they disappeared from the tables pretty quick, Ningala, hey?
Yeah, they did indeed.
So you gave a speech the other night as part of those celebrations, Ningala, where you were talking about your own legal journey and taking on a law degree at the age of 31. Five daughters?
Five daughters.
You think big, don't you?
Yeah. Well, like I said, I'm kind of stubborn, so I'm one of those people that I've got to do things the ass about way, you know, hard. Had I listened to my mother, I would have gone off to university in my youth, but no. Anyway, marriage, relationship, five kids later, and then at the tender age of 31 decided, look, if I don't get off, someday I'll, and we've all been there, someday I'll lose weight, someday I'll find this gorgeous man, someday I'll get this gorgeous woman. Yeah, and we kid ourselves when we sit there any longer than we absolutely have to. So I got off my bum and I realised, well, if I don't do it now, when my kids are grown, what am I going to have that will keep me occupied, that will continue to allow me to grow into the person that I'm supposed to be?
So tell us about heading off to uni. How daunting was it? And I know that once you'd completed your degree, you went on to achieve greater things.
Yeah, the journey itself was particularly intriguing in the sense that I had been out of the education system for some time, obviously went off and worked and got married and had children. And university was a different landscape. University required an element of sheer commitment and drive and a bulldog tenacity, really. But I found it daunting because I'd undertaken the exercise of convincing myself that I was well-versed to be able to take on this intellectual challenge. And then in my first year, I failed three of my four units and I went... I started howling like a damn sookie bub on the side that it's lost its friggin' ice cream scoop out of a friggin' cone. But then I thought to myself, you know what, this is what people are expecting, because there had been some unkind statements from family and others that said, well, you know, Ningla's adventurous and yes, she's more than capable, but a law degree? Really? Come now, tut, tut. And of course, the failure in the first year fed into that frenzy and I was like, and then I reconcile the fact that, you know what, Ningla, you haven't been here for a while, you need to get back on the bike, you need to keep pedaling, you need to stop kidding yourself that this is going to be a walk in the park. You're going to have to take on a whole different mindset. And that mindset was a killer instinct. Get down there, get your hands dirty, bust your butt, work hard, and you will see the fruits of your labour.
I remember those years because your children were very young. And I imagine they were proud of Mum then, but I was looking around the room on Friday night when you were giving your speech and three of your five daughters were in the room and they just looked incredibly proud. That's our Mum.
Yeah, yeah.
How does that make you feel?
I get goosebumps when I think about it, but, you know, that's exactly the same kind of exposure that I had from my mother, and that was she didn't allow the fact that she too was a single mother of six children when she went off and did higher education, travelled abroad, got an overseas scholarship and did all this amazing stuff, owned her own home, which was unheard of in those days. And I was like, how the crap does someone do that? But she did, and I was like, well, you know what, Mum had six kids on her own, so I had no damn excuse, no excuse whatsoever. So it was interesting because growing up, I would there were some classes out of the electives that I chose that were late at night. So I'd sit up the front, I'd take all my kids with me. They were all sitting up doing their little homework and the little lecturer's looking at me rather strangely as if to say, who are these little people and what are they doing here? But of course they were going about the business of doing their homework and listening silently and being very patient with Mother Dear, and yeah, they came on the journey with me. So I think that also inspired them that nothing is impossible if you are passionate enough and if you are driven enough and if you believe in yourself enough that anything is possible, no matter how long the journey. And whilst it took 4 years for the average person to do it, it took me six. But you know what, at the end of the day, and this is how I would reconcile the fact that the journey was a little bit tougher than the average, and that is, look, at the end of the day, when I graduate, my piece of paper is going to look exactly like everybody else's when I walk across that stage.
It was an incredible speech that you gave at the anniversary, and you talked about your family influences, and of course your father and your uncle were some of our very first field officers back in the 1970s. So there was a lot of people in the room who would have worked alongside your family in those earlier years, and it was a really special night. But I think your speech was so generous in what you gave us. It was not just an insight into the 1970s, but the ongoing legacy of what that brings to your own children today and to our future generations. And you had us laughing, you had us crying, and you just spoke so much from the heart that I feel very privileged that we were able to sort of share in what you had to say on that night.
Well, the interesting thing is when you have powerful movers and shakers who come from a space where it's about fighting the good fight to make the pathways easier for our mob, I am the recipient of that. And my ability then to travel down a pathway that saw me undertake huge challenges, not just in completing the degree after a failed marriage and homelessness and all sorts of other stuff that the universe wanted to throw at me, there were opportunities that arose. And the interesting thing about opportunities is that we must see them for what they are, and that's a chance to grow. That's a chance to walk through that door of opportunity, that window of opportunity, to say, I claim this space now and I can create what I must out of it in order to be able to show others that these things are real. So when I got accepted as a judge's associate, it was the first time an Aboriginal law graduate had actually been an associate of a judge. Incidentally, that set off a steamroller effect where the other Aboriginal law graduates in my year and after me that also took on those challenges or had those opportunities present. So it was breaking down barriers. It was cracking the glass ceiling. I then secured articles with the Office of the Director of Public Prosecutions. That's the first time an Aboriginal law graduate had done that, and that was particularly exciting. And then when I got admitted as a barrister solicitor in 204 and stayed on as the state prosecutor, it's the first time the prosecutorial office in Western Australia actually had an Aboriginal state prosecutor. And I thought, the interesting thing though, sitting there in my lush office with beautiful sweeping views of the Swan River, it's actually a very lonely space. It's a very isolating position to be in. And I think that that's what scares some of our mob away from brilliance, away from excellence, is that sometimes those journeys are long and hard and tiresome, and to get there takes an enormous amount of courage, and sometimes it's such a lonely space to be in. But I thought to myself, well, you know what, I'm a bit of an outcast anyway, and that's okay, but if I don't do this, who's going to do it? Because I now have 5 children watching me. My every move has to be now much more well-planned and thought out and calculated to get the maximum effect of generating an interest and a passion in them. And I now say to my children, particularly my youngest child, is a bit stubborn and hard-headed, just like her mother. She went off to a march just recently for Aboriginal deaths in custody. And I said, Tierra, you have to be as part of this movement, because people like your mother, we now have to hand the baton over to you. You're the next generation. And if it means that you have to go back to the streets to raise awareness, that's what you have to do. She's doing a degree in environmental sustainability and management. Little Ningler is doing a double degree in political science and history. The twins are in the performing arts, and it's funny because one of the twins was in the room and Shakira turned to her and said, now, you know where you get your acting skills from, don't you? See her up there? That's you. So, of course, she thought that was rather amusing. She's in her second year of NIDA at the National Institute of Dramatic Art. That is something that she's always wanted for herself. And I've always said to her, there's no excuse. There's nothing stopping you. Her twin sister is currently in Los Angeles. She's a big Foxtel superstar on the Wentworth show. She's also a Whopper graduate. And Dejaran is in China. Dejaran is the eldest child. She is a sports and exercise scientist by trade, but she's going off and doing medicine. And for each and every one of their journeys, despite the fact that they've got a multiplicity of exciting pathways that they're walking down, for each and every one of them, I've said that there's no excuse. Just because you're black, just because you're a woman, that should not stop you from being the people that you are supposed to be, in order to then inspire not just your children but the broader community. I mean, the youngest child, Tierra, is constantly she's involved with the Australian Indigenous mentoring experience, and to see these young people, seeing young Aboriginal kids not much older than themselves who are down learning pathways and creating opportunities for themselves, they're inspiring a whole new generation. And that's what this is all about. It's about, at the end of the day, society owes you jack shit. And in actual fact, that was a message my mother always promoted to me. Just because you're a black fella, just because you're a woman, doesn't mean that you have to sit on the outer peripheries of life. You've got to get in there. You've got to get your hands dirty. You've got to work hard. You've got to be committed. But don't ever lose sight of who you are or where you've come from, and know who you are.
Education opens doors.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's the golden key that unlocks many doors.
Ningali Aaron Marks, it's been an absolute pleasure. I hope we can do it again soon.
Absolutely. I love it.
Thank you for sharing some of your story with us on Noongar Radio. And I'm thrilled to say that we do go national now through the National Indigenous Radio Service. And I'm sure that you're going to be touching a lot of people who hear your interview all the very best to you and your family.
Thank you.
Thank you for being such a special part of the celebrations of the Aboriginal Legal Service on Friday night. And we'll chat again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me.
That wraps up Law Matters for another fortnight. I hope you can join me again in 2 weeks' time. But thank you to everyone involved in the celebrations of the ALS. Our 40th anniversary celebrated on Friday night. Our President Michael Blurton giving a beautiful speech at the start of the night. And Robert Hitchcock, the Aboriginal sculptor, who donated a Yagan sculpture to be silent auctioned on the night. It couldn't have been a better night. It was fantastic. Roll on the next 40.